pinpointing, I think, what draws you to the things you like reading, especially, is helpful. So if you can pinpoint what makes you like to read, that might help you figure out what makes you like to write as well.
Welcome to Homeschool Conversations with Humility and Doxology, a series of interviews with real-life homeschool moms, dads, and other educators on all sorts of topics that affect our lives as homeschool parents. I'm Amy Sloan, a second-generation homeschool mom of five, and I am so delighted that you are here. Here on Homeschool Conversations, we'll discuss educational philosophy, family life, and more. Come chat with us. Hey guys, I'm excited to share a bonus episode of Homeschool Conversations with you this week, an interview with Amanda Macrina, author of the newly published YA novel, Traitor. This is an interview your teens may enjoy as well. Please remember that different readers are ready for a variety of content at a wide range of ages. Please head to the link in the show notes to read more about Traitor to determine if it is a good fit for the teens in your particular family. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Amanda. Hello, friends. Today I am joined by Amanda Macrina. Amanda, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Well, Amanda was homeschooled through high school and graduated from the University of West Georgia with a BA in History and Political Science. For 3 years, she taught high school English and government at an international school in Madrid, Spain, and is now a bookseller in Franklin, Tennessee. And I just recently read her newly released book, Traitor. And so we're going to get to talk to her about that. But first, Amanda, could you just tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Sure. Well, you covered the basics. I was homeschooled through high school. I'm originally from the Atlanta area. I never wanted to be a teacher, but somehow that's what I ended up doing out of college. Actually, before I was in Spain, I was in Japan teaching English. So never would have predicted that's where I would end up, but that's where I went. So I'm out of teaching now. I work as a bookseller, which I've really loved. I've always been a passionate reader, so this is like a dream job for me. But yeah, I've really, really loved being in the Franklin, Tennessee area as well.
Yeah, when I was growing up, I used to think if only there was a job that would pay me to read books, that would be like the best job ever.
Yeah.
you almost have it there as a bookseller because you have to read them. Well, you told me that the earliest version of Traitor, the young adult novel that was just published, actually started as a short story that you wrote as a homeschool high school assignment. So can you tell a little bit about that story? And were you writing a lot of fiction as a student or?
Yeah, so I wrote off and on throughout high school. I think I was 17 and I did NaNoWriMo for the first time. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but I tried it for the first time that year. It's where you write 50,000 words in a month. And I did that, and I did it with the express goal of I want to be published someday. So that was, I think, the moment when I decided this is what I want to do. I mostly wrote fantasy starting out. I was a big Tolkien fangirl, so that was kind of what I was trying to write when I started out. But in my senior year of high school, I got the assignment to write a short story that was in a setting that we had studied. And I was already a World War II buff at that point. And I was starting to get more interested in Soviet history, so I wrote a short story about a Soviet sniper during World War II. And I mean, it looked a little bit different. If you read Traitor now, it looks different from that. It was more of a conventional chase thriller. I've got the, you know, main character being chased by the secret police and all this kind of exciting stuff. So I like to think Traitor is a little more believable and nuanced, but that was the genesis of the idea.
Okay, so I can just imagine a homeschool mom out there who's thinking, wow, my kids hate writing. I can't imagine them ever wanting to do something like that. So from your own experience, what would you say, like, was there a way to encourage your love of writing?
I want to maybe clarify. I love having written. I don't necessarily love writing itself. And this was true through college as well. I never liked writing papers or anything like that. But I think what has helped me is making sure I'm coming at it from an angle that I'm passionate about, especially if it's something that I'm going to have to be working on over multiple drafts, something that I'm going to have to be spending a lot of time on. I mean, I have to make sure it's something that I care about. So, pinpointing, I think, what draws you to the things you like reading, especially, is helpful. So, if you can pinpoint what makes you like to read, that might help you figure out what makes you like to write as well.
So, were there any particular authors or books that really drove your love of story?
I mentioned Tolkien already. Another big one when I was in high school was Rosemary Sutcliffe, who was a British children's historical fiction writer. I loved everything of hers that I read, and she was definitely a big influence. Later on in high school, I really got to love Ernest Hemingway. I just love his writing style. He doesn't always write the most uplifting things, but I just love his prose, and I continue to love reading him.
I got the chance to reread some Hemingway last year because I assigned it to my teens. I was like, oh, well, I guess I'll just have to reread it again for fun so that we can talk about it. It is.
Hemingway for fun. I'm not sure that's how I would classify it, but yes.
Well, the beauty of the language, if not,
Yes.
you know, the worldview approach to life.
Right.
Well, I would love to talk specifically about Traitor for a minute. So, when my copy showed up, I kind of ignored chores for a couple days so that I could finish it. And it is a really gripping tale of a very complicated social and political setup. And I thought of myself as someone who knew a lot about World War II, but I didn't know any of this story at all. So, what was it that specifically drew you to this sort of part of World War II and the Eastern Front there?
Part of it, I think, was a personal connection. So my family has some Polish roots, and I started taking an interest in that history back in high school. And so Traitor was the opportunity to dig into some of that, give me a personal handle on some of the events of World War II that we don't maybe learn as much about. And then also just more generally, I think we don't tend to study the Eastern Front as much because it's very bleak history and very depressing history often. But I think the bleakness at times makes us see the moments of grace more clearly. And as I was researching, I read so many stories of self-sacrifice and unexpected mercy, and I really wanted to honor those and to make them more widely known. One of my specific sources was a compilation done by the Polish Institute of National Remembrance that was just recounting these stories of Ukrainians who had risked their lives to save their Polish neighbors during wartime massacres in this region of eastern Poland, western Ukraine that I'm writing about. Just heartbreaking stories, but at the same time really heartwarming stories as well, as you saw these moments of grace and self-sacrifice. And I just really wanted to honor those.
Well, if you've been around here for any length of time, you know how much I love including poetry and other beautiful memory work in our family's homeschool day. But if you've wondered what are the best morning time poems to include, well, I have a free printable for you. Head to humilityanddoxology.com/100morningtimepoems, and you'll get to download a list of 100 of my favorites. And then be sure to come back and let me know which ones your family has enjoyed. Well, one of the things that I really appreciated about your story was it is telling a very dark story, and yet it never like veers over the line to just feeling complete bleakness about humanity or about the story. And really, also, the story is way more complex than like here are the good guys and here are the bad guys. I think, you know, when I first started reading, I'm like, who am I supposed to be cheering for? Like, which side is right? And it's like the actual history is way more complicated than that. But you were able to tell the story without kind of communicating in like this total moral relativism. So it was
I was impressed that you were able to do that. So when you're dealing with real events like this, you know, real cultures, real history, you know, real people groups that have this sort of complicated, twisted relationship, you know, how do you navigate telling that kind of story as an author? And then how do you hope readers will respond when they read something that may not be easy to understand on the first go round?
Sure. Yeah. One of my readers has noted this is not just an everybody against the Nazis story. It's not that simple. And sometimes we want history to be that simple, and it's very rarely that simple. But I definitely wanted to be sure I was approaching this material very respectfully. It's still a hot button issue between Poland and Ukraine even to this day. So I wanted to make sure I was reading both Polish and Ukrainian sources. I was looking at the broader historical context. But the important thing as well was to make sure I was grounding this conflict in characters that I hope the reader will care about. You know, I think the plot doesn't matter if the readers don't care about the characters. They've got to have that connection with the characters. And, you know, it was important for me with Polya, my main character specifically, to write a character whose faith rooted him and was kind of this inseparable part of his identity, because that's not often a portrayal that we get in young adult literature. But most of all, I wanted readers to see this as a story, even though it's unfamiliar history, it's complicated history. I wanted them to see this as a story about people who were trying to do the right thing, even when they weren't sure what that even looked like.
When we study history, you know, one of the things I talk to the kids about in general, my children, is that we're not just looking at sort of, you know, two-dimensional characters on a page. These were real people. And the same person often would have moments of heroism and moments where they would do something despicable. And to be able to study history from that perspective, which is sort of the same way that we approach literature, right? Like asking, why did this character do what they did? It helps us, I think, have a better sense of our own humanity as well, and like current events and the people around us. That we're all kind of complicated like that.
Yes, for sure, for sure.
Well, I actually have three questions for you from three homeschool teens. So I'm going to play the first one for you.
I'm Lucy, a high school sophomore who's been homeschooled her entire life. I was wondering how you went from being an unpublished author to being a published author.
Okay, so the question was, how did I go from being an unpublished author to being a published author? And the basic answer is a lot of emails. It's a process, and it's not a process for impatient people, which I am an impatient person, so it was definitely a learning experience. But the first thing that you have to do when you've written your manuscript, and you need to make sure that you have a complete manuscript before you even start doing this, but you need to get an agent. And to get an agent, you have to write what's called a query letter, which means you're basically describing the plot of your book and you're telling the agent, this is why I think you want to read this book and why you want to represent it to publishers. So you're trying to capture the agent's attention and interest. And then if everything goes right and the agent likes your book, you'll start a relationship with that agent, and the agent will then take your book and send it to publishers for you, which it's important to have the agent, because the big publishers, the big five, the big New York City publishers, won't even look at manuscripts unless they're coming from one of these literary agents. So if you want to get into New York publishing, you have to have a literary agent. But basically, you send a lot of emails out to agents, and then the agent sends a lot of emails out to editors, and then you send a bunch of emails to your editor. And eventually, after 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, your book comes out. That's the process.
Yeah, it's not just as easy as writing something and shipping it off somewhere. There's right. A lot of that nitty-gritty work that's going into it too.
For sure.
All right, I'm going to play our second question.
Hi, my name is Joshua, and I'm in 10th grade. In your opinion, which is more important to develop as the author, the characters or the setting?
All right, so which is more important to develop, the characters or the setting? You know, I can only speak for my own process, but I always start with character. Again, I think the character is what the reader is going to first connect with. And, you know, obviously you have to do enough preliminary research into your setting to make sure that the character works in that setting. But in my experience, readers are going to forgive a lot, but they're not going to forgive a character that they don't care about. So again, for me, it starts with character.
All right. And our final question.
My name is Emma and I'm in eighth grade. My question is, how do you get motivation to actually sit down and write?
That's the tricky part. How do I get motivation to sit down and write? And this has been a learning process as well, but especially now that I've got deadlines that I've got to meet, I can't always just wait for motivation to hit me. You know, sometimes I've just got to sit down and make myself write even when I don't feel like it. And often I find that if I just start, even if, once I actually make myself start putting words on the page, I'll get into a groove if I work at it. And then I found if I get stuck, if I really just can't get the words to come, leaving it for a while and walking away really helps. You know, even if that's just getting up and moving around for a bit or doing some exercise or maybe even just taking a hot shower and then coming back with fresh eyes, that really helps, you know, me move past that sticking point. You know, giving myself permission to take a break, that really helps as well.
So do you normally write in the morning or in the evening, or does it just sort of depend on the day and your schedule?
It depends. I am definitely an outlier here, but I do not have a consistent daily routine. And part of that is because I have a day job, and part of it is just I'm lazy. Usually I find that my best writing happens in the early afternoon. I don't know why, but that's when it happens.
You just found your sweet spot.
Yeah.
Well, may I ask you a question that actually wasn't on my list, but it kind of has come to mind?
Ad-libbing, sure.
And if it goes terribly, we can just cut it out. I wanted to ask about the young adult genre, which seems to, while it's, I guess it's actually relatively new in the publishing world, relatively speaking, and it has become such a huge popular kind of genre, both for teens and actually for adults who enjoy a lot of YA. So what makes a YA book a YA book?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, because I feel like even in publishing, there's still people trying to figure out the answer to that question. I will say it's not what you would think necessarily. It's not just the character's age, because you can have adult fiction that features younger characters. It's not just the fact that the characters are teenagers. I think a lot of it has to do with what kind of questions the narrative is getting you to think about. So a lot of it is this a coming of age story? Is this a story about the character figuring out their place in the world or their place in society? A lot of young adult has to do with characters figuring out relationships. You know, the questions that kids ask themselves in high school, who am I, where do I fit in, what is my role in society, that kind of thing. Those are young adult questions. And typically adult fiction, the character has moved past those questions. They've figured out where they belong in society. So those aren't the driving questions of the narrative anymore. But again, it's not just to do with the age of the characters, but generally in young adult, it's gonna be, and this changes, this has changed even since I've been writing. Nowadays, young adult is generally going to be characters who are 16 to 18. Even characters up to 15, those would be considered middle grade now. Young adult tends to be those older teen characters for whatever reason.
Okay, that's really fascinating. I didn't realize that the age had sort of shifted even a little later.
Yeah, than
I was thinking.
I think a lot of people feel there's kind of a gap in young adult because there's not a lot of young adult coming out that addresses younger teen readers. I think that's kind of left to middle grade, and middle grade doesn't really address that older end of the range either. So there's kind of maybe a gap where we need more stories for that age range.
Well, maybe someone who's listening can write that story.
Yeah.
Do you have any particular favorite YA authors that you enjoy reading?
Yeah, so some of my favorites, I really love Ruta Sepetys, who writes just phenomenal historical fiction. She's written several books about the Eastern Front of World War II, so she's been a big influence on me. Elizabeth Wien, who wrote Codename Verity, is one of my favorite writers as well. I read quite broadly. I don't just read historical fiction, but some of the World War II historical fiction that has come out this year that I've read has been really great. So Sherry Smith had a book called The Blossom and the Firefly that came out earlier this year that's from the Japanese perspective, which was really interesting. I really enjoyed that one. And then Andrew Fukuda had a book about a Japanese American soldier in the United States Army, and that was really interesting. That was an interesting perspective. His family is put into the incarceration camp by the government, and he volunteers to fight for this special Japanese American battalion. It was a really interesting story, so I enjoyed that one. And then I've actually been reading some middle grade historical fiction lately that I loved. One of those was The War That Saved My Life by Kimberly Brubaker Bradley. I can't get her name out, but I really enjoyed that one.
My daughters have really enjoyed that one. And then right now, my second daughter is reading a book that my older daughter had recommended. It's A Night Divided. So it's set in East and West Berlin. So
that's Jennifer Nielsen. Is that?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. She writes some great, great middle grade historical fiction for sure. Yeah.
Well, you just gave us a lot of great titles. Is there anything particular that you're reading right now?
So this is not historical fiction, but I just started rereading The Imitation of Christ. I read it a few years ago and got a lot out of it, and I'm rereading it again and really enjoying digging into that. So that's my current read right now. I also just read The Assignment by Liza Wiemer about some high school students who are given what they consider to be an immoral assignment to defend the Nazi final solution to the Jewish problem. And they're given this assignment in their high school history class to defend the Nazis' debate about what to do with the Jews in Europe, and they kind of protest against the assignment. It's an interesting story, so enjoyed that one as well.
That does sound really interesting. Okay, well, I'm asking this same question to all of my guests this fall, and I know you're not a homeschool mom or a homeschool parent, but you know, you were a homeschool student yourself, so I think the perspective you could bring to this question would be really interesting. If you were talking to a new homeschool parent, what would be the thing you would want to say to them?
First of all, respect, because that's a full-time job for sure. I would say giving yourself grace and allowing yourself to make mistakes, because I think you're probably not going to ruin your kid's life even if you do mess up. So allowing yourself some wiggle room and some grace is, I think, very, very important.
Yeah, I'm a second generation homeschooler, so I can remind myself of that. It's like, you don't have to be perfect.
Yep.
God's grace covers a multitude of sins.
Yes.
Well, Amanda, thank you so much for joining us today to talk about your writing, and I know this will be fun for my listeners. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you again for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening in on this week's Homeschool Conversation. For show notes and links to all the resources we discussed, head to humilityanddoxology.com/homeschool-conversations. And if these episodes are an encouragement to you, would you take a moment to leave a rating and review and to share with your friends? I am so thankful that you are here on this adventure with me. Let's repent of our constant striving, relish the joy of learning, and rest in the work of Christ on our behalf. Stand fast, my friends.